My name is Tess Newton-Kane. I'm a Research Associate with the Development Policy Centre. And this morning, it's a great pleasure to meet again, Sina, after quite a while, with Sina Retzlaff, who's visiting Port Vila from Samoa. So good morning, Sina. Welcome to Vanuatu.
Thank you, Tess. It's nice to be here.
Great. Okay, so we've got a few things that we've already identified that we might have a chat about this morning. And I'd like to start with the theme of leadership, and perhaps you could give us some background, some information as to what your experience of leadership has been to date in your home country of Samoa and possibly elsewhere.
Thanks, Tess. Personally, a role that I've played that I've thoroughly enjoyed in leadership in Samoa has been the role of president of the Samoa Chamber of Commerce. At that time, I was the first female president. We hope that will set the scene of having more women come through into that role. In terms of the private sector, it has been really interesting to see how much the private sector really is in partnership with government for Samoa's economic development. It was a time when Samoa was coming to its final stages of WTO accession. It's a time when the plus got added to PESA plus, and in absolutely almost everything that is done in, from the government's perspective in legislative changes, in policies that are put in place, rules and regulations, as well as the development partners' work, there was always seemed to be a need to engage the private sector. So in terms of leadership, Tess, I felt that that was a real credit to our government of the day. Of course, there were times when we felt that it was perhaps a consultation tick in the box, and that can never be avoided. But we certainly felt as a private sector group that it was a real partnership. That they did need a perspective of the private sector. They were asking what the impacts were to the private sector. And from there, that was informing the decisions that were being made economically, sometimes even socially going forward. Another very interesting initiative was the formation of PIPSO. So that's taking the private sector to a regional level. We felt at the time that there was a need for a regional body to represent the private sector, especially in terms of the forum secretariat, and when the ministers of the region were meeting on a regional level, we were able to put forward a private sector voice and their own views on policy going forward. That was also very interesting. On a personal level, I'm the daughter of a politician, so in terms of leadership, I've been involved in many a campaign, and have gotten to know the ins and outs of running a campaign to be in political office in Samoa, and a whole lot of lessons to be learned from there, a whole lot of observations being made over the years, and of interest is how Samoa had developed. My father was in politics for 25 years, and over those years we saw our country mature in terms of the voting system, improve the processes around elections, and also interesting to note how our people responded in voting for candidates over the years.
Okay, that's great, thanks. I'd like to talk in a little while a bit more about the private sector aspect of your background and your current thinking. But before we do that, I know that at the moment you're currently doing some research and policy engagement work in relation to violence experienced within family relationships. So in the Samoan context, drawing on what you've just talked about leadership, where do you see the leadership gaps in that space?
Tess, Samoa has recently, just last month, passed the Family Safety Act. So if we're looking for the gaps, we can't say it's in the legislative reforms. We have a reform commission, and it's taking a lot of our legislation forward. And so the legislative framework is at least in place. I see the gaps in perhaps support to response teams or response units or response organizations. And I say that in terms of perhaps the domestic violence units within our police force. One has been established, so again, the infrastructure is slowly coming into place. Domestic violence unit in the police force also, we see are getting support from New Zealand and Australia, so it's well and truly in place. We also have a very strong Samoa victim support group, so there's an NGO that is also responding to the needs of victims or families that are in this situation. I think the real gap test is understanding of the issue, that the people in the legislative reforms, the people within our domestic violence unit in police, the people, indeed, NGOs who are working voluntarily in this area, as well as the education system, teachers bringing up our young children and as well. I think there's a real need for an understanding and an awareness of, first of all, what it is, and secondly, the impacts. I'd really like to see research in the area where we're determining what the cost is of family instability, you know, domestic violence in a family. What is that costing us economically? I draw from an experience in Victoria where they know in Australia, for example, that it's $13 billion Australian dollars a year that is a cost of domestic violence to them. Now, Victoria has a figure of $1.3 billion a year. Victoria have established and they're making it well aware in campaigns that victims of domestic violence in women is now the biggest. That's how far they've been able to be confident with the research. The biggest cause of death in women from the ages of 35 to 50. And that's not from actually being physically hurt, but that's from the stress. That's from developing diseases such as high blood pressure and cancer. And so these types of things, I think, is where the gaps are in Samoa. If we were able to be more informed of the impacts of domestic violence, and people think it's a women's issue, but in fact there are children involved. So there's a whole generation of and future leaders. You know, so people like to talk about youth issues, but not necessarily that our youth are being impacted by domestic violence or coming from homes. How many homes are being impacted? I think that's where the gaps are. Those types of statistics and data would really help to inform a conversation of leaders, and then be able to, and particularly inform those who are already working in the space. You have to commend the people that are already working in this space. I'd really like to see more support be given to them.
Okay. So based on your research and your the conversations you've already had, do you see that gender-based violence generally, or domestic violence more particularly, is this an issue in Samoa that's worsening or improving? What's your sense of what the trend is in relation to that issue?
Tess, I think I don't feel, and this is just some very general observations, I don't think that it's getting worse. I do believe, though, from having spoken to people that are working in this space, that it can get worse with economic hardship. I think what is happening in Samoa is, because, as mentioned, there has been more awareness. The police domestic violence unit have put campaigns on television. There have been more general awareness in the villages through the work of the Samoa Victim Support Group. So there may be more reported cases, but I think we can't confuse having more reported cases and saying that the problem is increasing. I think more and more people are becoming aware, so we will have more reported cases in that sense. What I do feel is that the women are becoming more aware of their rights as well. We have a very good educated base of women. In fact, statistics are showing, and all of the data that comes out of the high schools show that the girls are excelling more so than the boys. There is a huge number of women now in the CEO positions in Samoa, as well as the assistant CEO positions in Samoa. So there is definitely a growing empowerment of women in Samoa. Whether that is going to increase cases of domestic violence, whether that's going to increase stress within their intimate partner relationships because of their success, will be very interesting. Talking to a group in Melbourne, they are now awaiting a study that hopefully will come out of ANU that will determine what the impacts of the successes of women in business and how it relates back to domestic violence. So while it's like a catch-22, while we are then wanting more women in business, more women to be productive, more women to be successful, is that going to end up causing problems at home?
Mm. Yeah, no, I think it is a very contested issue. Mm. But in terms of addressing gender-based violence, what do you think is an appropriate balance between the two things that we've already discussed? On the one hand, there's the service delivery to victims, and I'm thinking particularly around medical services and legal services. And then on the other hand, there's work around changing attitudes within the community, educating young people, rights awareness, whatever it is. What do you see in the Samoan context? Is that balance right at the moment, or does more work need to be done on one side of that equation than on the other? And if so, how should that break down?
I think before any awareness campaign is starts up, and before we even begin to roll out an awareness campaign, advertisements, for example, TV ads, 30-second ads, they can really impact on our people. You know, we have a single, we have a nationwide television station, so you put an ad up on TV and it'll get into every home in Samoa. Before any of that starts, I really believe that we need to ensure that there's a safety net, I've come to call it, that what you've mentioned, that the support, the referral system to people that come forward is in place, the legislative framework is in place. Everybody is aware of the stages of the problem, everybody is aware of the needs of victims, and just really being better equipped in terms of understanding what the problem is, in terms of knowing what how to refer, what the referral services are, and that those referral services are themselves prepared and have the resources. If we needed to prioritize those tests, I would say we deal first with the response teams, that we deal first with what victims require in terms of the legal services, in terms of the medical services, and of course just general support to them. And I think that we have a culture and of very close extended family units that can be brought into that equation, in that support unit. It doesn't necessarily just have to be an NGO or the domestic violence unit or the police department or even a medical center. We could really draw in our community base there. We have churches in Samoa that are very active. Extended family units are very active. I think if we needed to prioritize because of limited resources, we would deal with that first and then raise awareness. But you're absolutely right about the balance. We can't just keep dealing with incidences as they come forward. We do also a lot, as well as that, running parallel to that work, is a really good awareness campaign. When I say good awareness campaign, what we really do need in Samoa is an awareness campaign that is well tested, that is not going to be seen to be in the face. There is still a mindset, and there's a documentary that's recently come out by Steve Percival that really highlights some interesting ingrained mindsets that are there, that it is a private issue, mindsets that say this is a family matter and therefore it's nobody else's business. So the balance has to be right, but I think if we needed to prioritize, we would first focus on the support for the victims and the families that are involved and that are affected, and then really think out an effective way to raise awareness that's going to work and that's going to have our people respond positively to it. In that awareness, though, Tess, I really believe that if it's a behavioral change, we're not going to do it overnight, then we do need to put some programs into the schools. In developed countries have programs in schools that just sort of show children that it's not right. Teachers need to be, we have a very good faculty of education. We could put a syllabus through there to help them understand how to recognize, how to support young children if they see that they are affected by it.
Okay. So the issues that you've raised, I think, are all very important ones. What I'd like to know is, what is your sense of how significant this is as a policy priority for the government of Samoa today?
I think it should be right up there, Tess. And the reason is, if you look at our government priorities now, right up the top is economic development. Right up the top is women in parliament, for example. We would like more women in parliament, we would like more women in business, and we would like economic growth. All of those things, I believe, cannot be addressed unless we address the foundation of healthy family relationships. Unless we address, I think we're jumping the gun when we say, let's get some women in parliament, when we haven't addressed women's rights, when we haven't addressed imbalance in relationships that women have with men at the home or at the level of a family unit. I think if we continue to ignore that domestic violence does happen in Samoa, we continue to ignore that children are being affected by it, then it's always going to have a negative contribution to all the other priorities that Samoa has set out. Particularly in economic development, because women have such a strong role to play in economic development in our country. And then as well as, at the end of the day, women are rearing children. And so we do need to ensure that they're empowered, but not empowered to the sense of, you know, we need you in parliament, we need you to start up a business. But just empowered in the sense of that on a daily basis, they're living at peace and able to make their own decisions and make their own choices without fear of, being in a situation or making a decision that's going to have her end up, in the hospital or have her end up being on the other end of someone's anger and someone lashing out. So I think it's very important that we understand the numbers that exist. I think it's very important that we understand how many women are being impacted, and be really interesting to see what that translates to in productivity. You can't be productive, and if you have to sort of nurse a black eye for a few days, every month, that must take a toll on the women's ability to be productive. And then if you look at it holistically in Samoa, that's half of the population that are supposed to be economically active.
Okay, I'd like to return to something we talked about at the beginning, which was your connection with the private sector of Samoa, and you mentioned that you've previously been the president of the Chamber of Commerce, and I know that you are still very much active and connected with private sector activity. So what's your sense of the private sector mood in relation to the Samoan economy at the moment?
So current moods are always going to be different depending on who you speak with, and also depending on the time of year. So this time of year is probably not the best time to go around and say to the private sector, how's it going? And that is, there's always a dip after the peak of the Christmas period of visitors from overseas and the buzz of the festive season. We find the dip February, March, April. My sense from speaking with particularly small businesses in Apia, and I chat with them a lot, is that that dip seems to be getting longer and seems to be getting steeper every year. Right, so everybody expects, you know, in their cash flow that there's going to be a little bit of a holiday period and not much happening economically during that time. But people are feeling, and this could be the impacts of the global economy. People are feeling that it seems to be getting just a little bit too long, you know, stretching into May now, that sustained period of low economic activity, and also that it's really becoming quiet. That quiet is being redefined in a sense. The struggles the private sector continue to have in Samoa are those of the cost of doing business. So in Samoa we have the highest electricity rates in the country. When you ask why is that, where is that, you also then have to make the observation that we have a fantastic structure of having a tender process for the fuel that comes into Samoa. So we actually have the lowest fuel costs on island, and yet we have the highest electricity costs on island. There's a gap in there somewhere. But in general, the cost of doing business, from infrastructural cost, and then in particularly interest rates. We look across, for example, to our, let's take tourism for an example. So our tourist operators and people in that industry, they're competing with Fiji, say. Operators and businesses in Fiji enjoy a 6-7% interest rate for their investments, if they're taking out financing from the banks. In Samoa, we're at double figures. Interest rates can be 12, interest rates can be 14%. On a business. That in itself puts us on the back foot of competing regionally, particularly in the area of tourism. I mentioned electricity, that impacts tourism. Interest rates, that impacts tourism. What we really need is direct foreign investment. So in general in Samoa, the businesses could do with a break, really. They could just do with a break. Something has to happen. Whether it's direct foreign investment. We say agriculture is the backbone of the economy, but and then we see climate change issues coming through. You know, we are now regularly being affected by cyclones. Mm-hmm. We've had just as we were recovering from the tsunami, the cyclone came along last year. So it's not easy going for the private sector in Samoa, and mostly they are family businesses. Mm-hmm. Mostly. They are small businesses and they're all local, and our domestic market is unable to sustain economic activity at a time when there are no visitors, at a time when there is this dip, for example.
Mm-hmm. So tourism is very much seen as the hope for economic development in Samoa at this time.
That's right.
Yeah.
Tourism, and it affects, and it has a great ripple down effect on all the businesses, small businesses, apparel. It can come down to the growers, people that that farm subsistently can also contribute to that by selling to the hotels. So we're very much looking at tourism, but understand that there are a lot of constraints there too, and the competition from our neighbours in Fiji, Rarotonga, and also we're also competing with the global economy, where people are actually saving a lot more, you know, and not spending it so much on holidays. And if they are spending it on holiday, and I know Dinarawa, friends across at Dinarawa, are calling, you know, it, saying it in this way. They're saying we have 5-star hotels, and we're getting a 3-star tourist. Mm. You know, so we're getting a tourist that is going to save every penny, maybe go down to the local shop and buy a beer and not necessarily buy it at the resort. So I think people are spending less. And the numbers in Samoa also reflect that.
Yeah.
Tourism earnings has not been on the rise, and the yield that the businesses are making are certainly less.
Now, you mentioned about constraints, and you mentioned about constraints particularly in relation to foreign investment. So I guess finally I'd like to pick up on something I heard you discuss the other morning with Bruce Hill about the issue of land and land tenure in Samoa. So what if any is the relationship between the system, the current system of land tenure in Samoa? Is that acting as a constraint on foreign investment? You seemed, and obviously correct me if I'm wrong, you seem to be advocating for changing that system. Is that, do you, why would that be something that would improve foreign investment? What exactly is your thinking on that at the moment?
First of all, Bruce Hill always gets me in trouble. No. It is so important to have something done, and you're right, it was advocating for not necessarily taking away from customary land ownership, but I did say that something had to happen, that we needed to look at other ways to access land for foreign investors. We have a wonderful customary land system where the entire family owns the land. And by birth, you have rights to that land. It doesn't necessarily have to be the chief's. So it's actually a problem that's supposed to be a benefit. Everybody owns this land, and we all come and we work it. Now, what I did say was, land that belongs to everybody is ultimately then owned by nobody. So if things want to move forward and we want to actually develop a piece of land commercially, you know, essentially you need the okay of the entire clan, of your entire extended family, right down to an untitled person who lives in New Zealand and Australia and America. They can fly home and stop the project because that is their heritage. Now, whereas that has ways of protecting people's ownership of their land and protecting people's heritage and ensuring that families have enough land to work and live subsistently, it, on the other side, it's never going to solve our foreign investment issues. We have foreign investors who come and they want to secure leasehold land, and the system and our government does have now in place legislation. There is then another group of people, there's another feeling in Samoa who are saying that legislation doesn't work, people are going to take our land away from us. But I do think that in terms of economic development, we need to have this conversation openly, we need to have this conversation more, we need to have this conversation with the right stakeholders, and we do need to thrash out a way where we can ensure economic development. We can, while we're fighting over land tests, nothing's happening on it. While we're trying to decide what the best way is to go, what the best rules and regulations are in terms of leasehold properties, in the meantime, nothing's happening. So the conversation has to be done in an effective way. It has to have the right people around the table. It has to it also needs some leadership and prioritization. The same people who are saying, don't take our land, don't use it, are the same people that are saying, we're facing economic hardship. So those two things need to be brought to the table, and people need to understand the consequences of what they want in relation to what they need and what they're saying that government is not doing. And Samoa's facing economic hardship, okay, this is one way we can solve it. You can't then say no to that. So I think it's going to be an interesting conversation, Tess, and I think also that we do need to have some sort of system where land has to start belonging to certain people that can make decisions about it. And land that continues to belong to a large group of people who can't decide what to do with it is only going to impact negatively on Samoa's economic growth moving forward.
Okay, thank you, Sina. Thanks for making some time to chat. It's been great. I've learnt a lot, which is always fabulous. Enjoy the rest of your stay in Vanuatu.
Thank you very much, Tess. Thank you.